FM. I'm Roshanik Jaberi. On today's show, we'll be speaking to Mary Jo Mullins, co-artistic director of Niagara Dance Company, and Lynette Kessler, artistic director of Dance Camera West. But first off, we have dancer choreographer Angela Bloomberg joining us to talk about Rively Dances, Back to the Basics, and Mind the Gaps Collective's Yes But. Welcome, Angela.
Thank you very much for having me on air.
Thank you for joining us. Well, before we jump into talking about all these exciting projects, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and your dance background?
Sure. I'm originally from Germany, and I studied first dramaturgy in Germany before I decided, okay, that's too, maybe a little bit too, I wouldn't say intellectual, but it's a more a cerebral thing. And I decided I want to study dance, and then I went to the Laban Center in London where I did my undergraduate in dance theater. And after that, I worked for about 3 years as a freelance dance artist in London, and I worked for the Van L Company before I moved to Toronto to join the MFA program in choreography at York. And I just graduated.
Wow, yes. That's very exciting.
Thank you very much.
So now, can you tell us a little bit about Rively Dances and how this all sort of came about and came together?
Sure. Rively Dances Back to the Basics is modeled after the original dance series Dances for a Small Stage, which took place, or which was brought into life by Laura Taylor in the 90s and then taken to Vancouver by Julianne Saroyan. And it's specifically designed for the back room at the Rivoli, which is a cabaret-like space. There is a small stage and it has a dance floor, so it's much smaller than a theater space. And the idea was to create dances that suit this site-specific venue. Mm-hmm. And Heather Jones was asked to start the series again, and she invited me to join her on that adventure. So we have been putting the show together, Rively Dances Back to the Basics, for the last, like 3 months. We have been working on it, and now finally on Tuesday, June 14th, it's going to happen.
Wow, that's exciting. So can you tell us, going back to the use of the space, can you tell us a little bit about the space itself inspire the work? Were there any challenges with using the space?
Yeah, that's a great question. First of all, the space, it's very unconventional. You can use the choreographers are allowed to use the space in whichever way they want. For example, there is also a bar, and it happens often that pieces take place on the bar or that the bar is integrated in some form. And also the stage is slightly elevated, so maybe a dance takes place on the stage but also on the dance floor, so it's like two levels that we can use, which is the way it happens in Heather Jones' piece. And I guess challenges are to adapt to a small space. Let's say when you rehearse in a studio, it's you feel you have an infinite amount of space and you make movements big, and this changes a little bit. And it's also intimate because you are very close to the audience, which is unusual for dance. Usually dance is set to unfold better if there is a little bit of distance. Mm-hmm. So I think, which is true, but I also think it's true that an intimate space can offer something very something else, because the audience experiences the dance and the dancer differently since they are sitting so close.
So it becomes sort of like they're part of the journey and the experience rather than a disconnected audience sort of witnessing.
Very much so, yes. And of course this for us at performers is at first maybe unusual and you need to just do it. But it's just something it's a new experience, a new challenge, and you go for it.
And I wonder, did that dynamic also change the way you danced with each other in terms of the closeness of the space and being close to each other? Did it sort of, I know like when I'm dancing in a studio, like you said, and there's infinite amount of space and you're further apart from each other, you tend to maybe think a little more cerebrally instead of feeling each other and going by feel a little bit more because of the energy of the other dancers in the space.
Oh, absolutely. It's again, I can talk about Heather's piece. It's a very physical, athletic piece, which with some risks as well. So you need to make sure you really, well, you need to sometimes really pass by the other dancer very closely, but be without dropping the energy, just going for it, but knowing exactly where you are in space. And because the space is small, I find almost it's more risky.
Mm-hmm.
Because you need to navigate yourself differently in space in relationship to the other dancer.
Right, right. Now, you also call this sort of like an experimentational dance presentation. Mm-hmm. Can you sort of elaborate on that?
Sure. Because it is it's the first time we we initiate the Rivoli dances again, there is an experimental element just for us. Because the choreographers who we invited, they had an opportunity to rehearse in the space, but it's not that they had it available for, 10 rehearsals. And so there is something experimental. And also we are interested in featuring both established artists, but also something that might not be as established and more maybe more quirky or more less refined yet, but where we can see great potential. So we are also interested in giving younger artists the opportunity to show their work and to grow as artists. So that's the experimental side of it.
I see, okay. Mm. And in terms of the collaborators, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. The collaborators are Keiko Kitano. She will present a solo piece, which is some of you, the listeners, have seen Keiko's piece, Keiko's work already. It's, a modern dance, and usually very. it's a gorgeous piece. Her piece. It's she has her long dark hair open, and she works with very powerful and fluid movements. Then Nikki Wozniak. She is the artistic director of Desireda Dance Theatre. And she performs with a singer together. It's a solo with a singer. And Nikki is one of the artists who uses also the bar and the stage and the dance floor. So she really explores the sides of the backspace at the Rivoli. Then we have Katya Kuznetsova. She's a professional ballroom dancer. And she also graduated from York University this year with an MFA in choreography. And her work is strongly inspired by ballroom dance and also has a little bit like a cabaret notion to it. Then there is Heather Leslie. She's the artistic director of Evoke Movement Theatre. And she has created a duet, and it's a multimedia work that uses video projections. And then there is Heather Jones' piece, which is a duet. And it's a very raw, taxing physicality that she uses with an element of a lot of tension and suspense and a very intense physical piece.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And
it's six different independent pieces.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
And your piece specifically?
I am dancing for Heather, so
okay.
I am a dancer
in this particular
series. And as I said, it's a duet, and it's a little bit about basically two people who cannot come together, almost like two people who live in different realities, and who, in fact, it also becomes a trio with because there is a prologue and an epilogue, and the piece is called Everything. Nothing has changed. Everything is the same. That means that we start the piece and the piece ends in a similar constellation, but emotionally none of the performers has come together because everybody lives in a sort of separate reality.
Mm-hmm. That's very exciting. We definitely have to get it and see it. And in terms of shifting gears a bit, if you can tell us about Mind the Gap Collective.
Sure. Mind the Gap Collective is a collective of 5 choreographers. We, including myself, we all met at York University and just finished our MFA in choreography. And we have a show coming up at the 24th and 25th of June at 8 p.m. at the Pia Baumann School. And we have produced so far 1 show together in 2009, I believe. And we have this ethos that although we are a very eclectic set of choreographers, we try to make sure that we don't just put 5 pieces together, but that there is a connecting element, something that almost unifies us. And so in the show Yes But, you will see 5 different choreographic works. And the link is that we will have a pedestrian who will walk through each piece. So whenever we choose specific moments where we think it suits the piece, but it's just a pedestrian walking through, and we try to link the 3 pieces and also to break a little bit the illusion of the theater space by just having someone walking through the piece as if she was walking through an exhibition.
Mm-hmm.
The choreographers who belong to this collective are, well, myself, Angela Blumberg. Then we have Heather Jones, who I also just mentioned for Rivoli Dances, Katya Kuznetsova, Victoria Moore-Blakeney, and Anastasia Maywood.
Wow, okay, wonderful. Yeah. Well, you may at some point come down, join us again, and talk a little bit more about this at some point if we can get you. So.
Sure, great.
We'll have to keep the listeners in tune for that. Now, can you tell us a little bit about where, just kind of refresh the audience's memory about where to get tickets for both events?
Sure. So for Rivoli Dances, you can either email rivolidances@gmail.com to reserve your tickets. Tickets are $12. I just say this again, rivolidances@gmail.com. Or you can just buy them right at the door. The door opens at 8 o'clock. The show starts at 8:30. And that's at the Rivoli, which is on 332 Queen Street West.
And for Yes But?
For Yes But, you can also... we have a Facebook site, which is called Mind the Gap Group, where you can find all the information. It's on Facebook, Mind the Gap, if you type that in, you find our site. But you can also go to mindthegapcollective@gmail.com to book your tickets, or again, you can just buy them at the door at the 24th or 25th of June at the Scotiabank Theatre of the Pia Baumann School, which is on 6 Noble Street. That's on Queen and...
Dufferin, I believe.
Queen and Dufferin, exactly.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's been a pleasure speaking with you. And coming up, we have Mary Jo Mullins here on Evidence, CIUT 89.5 FM.
Become an exclusive sponsor of this hour of CIUT programming for just $30 a week. For more information, visit www.ciut.fm and click the Advertise With Us sign or email ciutsales@gmail.com.
CIUT can now be heard on channel 946 through Rogers Digital Cable.
Do you like what you're hearing and want more of it? Check out our schedule at CIUT.fm. We have over 80 unique programs we're sure you'll love. We're listener-supported CIUT 89.5 FM.
But I got the kind of love that knocks you down. I tell the lady, yeah, why'd you always frown and act all jaded? I'm not contagious, but I got the kind of love that knocks you down.
Welcome back. You're listening to Evie Dance on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Roshanik Jaberi, and Angela Bloomberg has stayed on with us to co-host.
My pleasure.
Joining me on the phone is Mary Jo Mullins, co-artistic director of Niagara Dance Company, and she'll be talking to us about Niagara Dance and their summer intensive program taking place July 25th to 29th. Good morning, Mary Jo.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure.
I know it's early morning, but lots of coffee.
Yeah.
Well, before we jump into talking a little bit about the dance company itself and the programs that you offer, why don't you tell us a little bit about you?
Oh, a little bit about me? Okay, sure. I started dancing, you know, of course, as a young child, like many dancers do. I'm from St. Catharines,
okay.
Raised in St. Catharines. And I started post-secondary training in dance at the University of Waterloo and also went to teacher's college following that, and then ended up at the School of Toronto Dance Theatre, and that's sort of where all of this stems from. Following going to Toronto Dance Theatre, I worked with Patricia Beattie, co-founder of Toronto Dance Theatre, for about 5 years in a very close mentorship capacity. At that time, she was still teaching at the school, and things were changing in the dance community, and there weren't a lot of places to continue with Graham technique, and I fell in love with the Graham technique while I was at the school, and she, of course, was one of my teachers there. And she also mentored us. There's a group of us. She mentored us in composition as well.
Mm-hmm.
So about three times a week, there are about five core members of this group that gathered to take class with her, and we also started choreographing. So we sort of functioned as a collective at that time, and we put on several productions and worked on different pieces together, and we also brought in other artists to work with, and she guided us all along the way.
Okay. That's great. Now, can you tell us how Niagara Dance Company, how it all came together?
Yes, good. The connection here is rather tight, actually. One of the dancers with the collective that we worked with in Toronto, Kathleen Martinez Hughes, also was in my class my year at the School of Toronto Dance Theatre. And, you know, having worked even much more closely for 5 years, I asked her to start Niagara Dance Company with me. Listeners need to understand that the whole time that I was working in Toronto, I was commuting from Beamsville.
Wow.
Yes. You know, having, you know, been raised in St. Catharines, you know, I went, you know, I lived in Waterloo, of course, and in Toronto while I was at the school, but the whole time that I was, you know, working, I was driving from Beamsville, and I had done that for about 7 years, mm-hmm. 2 to 3 times a week. And, again, after 5 years, had done a lot of choreographing and life changes and life stages, I just felt that it was time to move on and that I needed to be closer to home, and mm-hmm. asked her if she'd be interested in doing that, and she was, and gratefully and thankfully she agreed to move to St. Catharines
and
effort to do that.
And what the dance community in Niagara region, what is that like? Because I understand that this is the only contemporary dance company there?
It is.
Okay.
Yes. So I wouldn't say that prior to us establishing the company that there was a dance community per se, but in St. Catharines for numerous years now, there's a very strong and thriving arts community.
Mm-hmm.
And at this time, as we speak, there's a very unique project that's in development between the City of St. Catharines and Brock University, and it's a project that will build a new performing arts center mm-hmm. in our downtown, as well as a home for the Marilyn I. Walker School of Performing Arts for the university.
Okay.
And that's been, you know, an ongoing idea for a very long time, but it's actually a reality now. So I knew at the time that there was a growing arts community here.
Mm-hmm.
Elizabeth Chitty was very much involved in our arts community and developing policy, as well as she was our first executive director for the St. Catharines and Erie Arts Council, and she was one of my teachers at the School of Toronto Dance Theatre. So there was some understanding and some knowledge that the arts community was strong and that a dance company here would make sense.
Okay, I see. And how has the community changed, though, over the years since you've been there?
And how has the community changed? Yes. Well, there's a dance community in development.
Mm-hmm.
We are working in different ways with our community, and we've connected with different individuals. It's definitely something I would say that's in development. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
We have brought in other artists in terms of from other communities to perform in our company. We're working on a grassroots level as well as from in other ways, from top down to bottom up, as opposed to just working one or the other way.
Mm-hmm.
We have a mentorship program as well that has been really helpful, actually, in tapping into potential dancers in our community. We're looking to develop professional dancers as well as just a general dance community, offer classes in contemporary dance. It's something that there isn't a lot of here in this community, but it is growing.
And can you talk a little bit about the summer intensive that you're going to offer?
Sure, yes. This is the second time that we'll be holding a summer intensive. It will be held at the Sean O'Sullivan Theater at the Center for the Arts, Brock University. It's the first time we're going to be in that venue, so that's really exciting for us. We are running a program from Monday to Friday from 10 a.m. to 3 a.m., so it is an all-day program. And we're offering classes in grand base technique as well as some repertoire and potentially some creative process. We have Suzette Sherman from Dance Theater David Earle, who will be spending one whole day with us during that week, teaching, of course, grand-based class as well as some repertoire. I'll be teaching ground-based technique as well. And we've asked Elizabeth Chitty to do some creative process.
Wonderful.
And how's the mentorship program? Since you touched on that a little bit, can you elaborate about what the program's like and how people can audition for that?
Sure. Interestingly, this program I modeled on my experience working with Patricia Beattie. We always did define her, or I shouldn't say define, that's not a great way to describe it, but we always saw her as a mentor, and she very much saw herself as a mentor to us, passing down, you know, everything that she had learned and developed over, you know, 40 years of working in the art form to us, and it was very important to her to do that, and I feel that that is something that is rather critically important for artists, and not just young artists, shall we say, not just emerging artists, because our program is different from other. I wouldn't call it a professional training program. It's different from that as such, because while you're training, taking classes, you also are learning choreography, repertoire, and having having opportunities to perform it with the company. So I suppose it's, in a way, a combination of a professional training program and an apprenticeship, or a professional training program and an internship. It's different in that regard.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like a great exposure for students to be involved already in these three different activities, and hopefully they can nurture each other.
Absolutely. Yes, we very much see it that way as a great opportunity to nurture young artists, as well as give artists that have a little bit more experience a different learning environment. Or you can see it as professional development, I suppose.
Great.
And you also offer master class series and workshops as well. Is that correct?
We do, yes. We received funding from the Ontario Arts Council to offer master classes over our season that has just closed. And we provided classes with David Earle and Suzette Sherman throughout the season. And those have been very successful and important to the development of the growing dance community here in Niagara.
Wonderful.
And just let me ask one other question. How old are your students?
Now, when you say students, I can think in a large context. I can think in terms of all of our programming, or just specific programming.
You
can just specify.
Exactly, just specifying both.
Pardon me?
Yeah, just if you could just specify both.
Okay. For the summer intensive, we often say to our community that we prefer students be 16 years of age plus. So we are targeting high school students as well as post-secondary school students, people who are currently in dance programs, maybe just graduated from dance programs. We also have local dance teachers that are interested in it. I really hate, actually, to define age with our programs, because we're rather open to exposing people of different, again, ages and stages to the art form. And I suppose that comes from my own philosophy and experience of, sometimes particularly women will have to take time off to, you know, have children, etc., which I myself have done. And I think that life is very different now, and people choose to go to school at different times in their life and get the experience. It's more about the experience than the age, I suppose.
So it could well be that there is a 16-year-old student working together with a 35-year-old adult in the same class?
There could be. Depending on the experience of the individual.
That's fantastic. That's such a cross, making the link again. That's wonderful.
Exactly. And we find that right on up to working with Patricia Beattie and David Earle. Okay, so those connections for myself have continued right up until now, and I hope they continue into the future, to be very critical to my development and to my experience.
Right. Wonderful. Now, could you just tell us how can dancers or dance students apply to join the summer intensive?
Really easy. For the summer intensive as well as the mentorship program, all they need to do is email me directly at info@niagaradancecompany.com.
Great.
And the summer intensive, again, just as a reminder, is running from the 25th to the 29th of July.
That's right.
And for all our listeners out there, if you'd like to learn more about the company and all their programs, you can log on to their website at niagaradancecompany.com. And I'd like to thank our guest, Mary Jo Mullins, for joining us today. Coming up, we have Lynette Kessler here on Ebby Dance, and Skye Fairchild-Waller will be joining us, and Angela Bloomberg will stay on to have a little chat with Lynette. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be right back on CIUT 89.5 FM.
There must be another way. When she's gone to a better place, and loneliness will hurt you if you can't get through the night. Then the moment starts to fade, and dawn is just an hour away. I feel she's watching over, and it gets me through the night. It makes me wonder what you'd say. It's taking me back to the month of May, when I watched you do it.
Alright.
I'm thinking back to what we'd share. In many ways, I'm already there, and I watched you do it. Don't turn the lights on. Tonight I wanna see you in the dark. Don't turn the lights on, 'cause tonight I wanna see you in the dark. Don't turn the lights on, 'cause tonight I wanna see you in the dark. Don't turn the lights on, 'cause tonight I wanna see. Walk to take another lonesome evening spent without you there. And only those who hurt you will say patience is a virtue when it's been so long. And I can't think about it. No, I can't figure it out. 'Cause just how real you're feeling every time that you're appearing leaves no room for doubt. Makes me wonder what you'd say. It's taking me back to the month of May, when I watched you do it.
All right.
I'm thinking back to what we shared. In many ways I'm already there, and I watched you do it. Don't turn the lights on, 'cause tonight I wanna see you in the dark. Don't turn the lights on, 'cause tonight I wanna see you in the dark.
Welcome back to Every Dance on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Sky Fairchild-Waller.
And I'm Angela Bloomberg.
And our next guest is Lynette Kessler, who is the founder and executive artistic director of Dance Camera West, a critically acclaimed dance media film festival based in Los Angeles, California. Dance Camera West was founded in 2001 and has presented over 1,000 international dance films from 47 countries to 25,000 individuals throughout Greater Los Angeles. And this year, Dance Camera West is celebrating its 10th anniversary on June 16th, just 4 days from now. So, Lynette, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being up so early for us today.
Seriously. Sunday.
No, on a Sunday. This is your good deed for the day. So I wanted to just, before we talk about this year's festival, I wanted to just kind of get for our listeners a bit of a history and just kind of a trajectory. I know that you graduated from the undergraduate dance program at York University here in Toronto before going on to University of Michigan to get your MFA in dance. And I'm wondering if you could just elaborate for us the trajectory that took you from there to founding Dance Camera West in 2001.
All right. Just really quickly, after York, I went over to the UK to do a couple of summer dance workshops, and I ended up staying for about a year and a half, touring in a small modern dance company. So I'd been out of the States for a while, you know, after being in Toronto and then in London and Europe. And when I came back, it was, you know, going to date myself, but when I came back, early MTV was happening. And probably nobody listening to the radio right now remembers that, but was alive then. But I looked at MTV and I went, of course, back then, for people that don't know, it was nothing but music videos, and the music videos were incredibly creative and innovative, and all the producers and directors were just on top of it, art was happening. And I looked at that and I said, of course, no more touring. I don't have to live in Holiday Inn rooms. We can just make our work and have a regular day job. And of course, there's going to be a dance channel. I've been spoiled from living in Toronto and Canada and being in the UK, where art at that time was flourishing and funded well. So I just thought that, you know, I should start making media as a choreographer to reach, you know, more people instead of having, you know, a little modern dance company where your relatives and friends show up unwillingly again. So, yeah, so that's how it started. A seed was planted, and then, of course, by that time, by the late 80s, music then became was then corporate owned, right. You know, the corporate, it became corporate music, and right. Then of course MTV became, you know, it moved into the nothing but heavy metal music videos, and then what it is now today. But that's what really started my idea. But the thing is that the model in the States was, you know, I could support myself back then as a dancer, you know, through grants and touring and commissions and what have you. And then I was in New York after that. And then after a couple years in New York, just went, all right, forget this. I need to get a master's and teach. And from there, I went out to San Francisco, which was really a hotbed for independent film at the time, in the late 80s, early 90s, and I got a 3-year residency program out at the Headland Center for the Arts, and I did a lot of site-specific work, choreography, you know, in the environment, as one critic called it, the body was an extension of the natural landscape. And I played with that for, you know, a couple of years, and that's really where I made my transition from stage choreography to, you know, creating work through the camera and editing. And then I was in San Francisco for 10 years, and then I came down to Los Angeles 15 years ago and decided I could no longer afford to make dance films, dance media. Back then we called it dance video. every few years the name morphs.
right. It's true. It's true. To keep
up with the technology.
Right.
But oddly enough, I started performing and working with media, and I had a film 10 years ago that I had finished, and I just thought, wow, what, people ask me what was my business plan for Dance Camera West, and I didn't have one. It never occurred to me to start a festival. I mean, it was the last thing I ever thought of doing, and I was quite, you know, content with teaching and performing and making dance media, and I just thought it would be really fantastic to show my new film up at the Getty Center and have a party for my friends.
Mm-hmm.
And if people don't know what the Getty Center is, it's an amazing, it was new at that time, an amazing art space and the architecture, and it's just beautiful here in Los Angeles on top of a mountain overlooking the ocean. And what a great place. But we had such a huge response to the screenings that we did up there that people were in my face. I couldn't even get to the reception to my friends out in the lobby. People were in my face saying, why haven't I seen this before?
Right.
You know, we're in a town of, you know, the movie industry. So these are, you know, producers and directors and cinematographers and composers. Like, why haven't I seen this before? And where can I see more?
Mm-hmm.
And so we thought, well, we'll do it again next year. And it just took off. It was, you know, I've just been running to keep up, frankly, for 10 years.
Right. And what made, so it seems like it was kind of just by coincidence that Los Angeles became the base and the home for Dance Camera West. Would you say that's true?
What's that?
Would you say that it was just by incidence that Los Angeles became the home and the base for Dance Camera West? Or did you...
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that what's interesting is dance media or dance film, these festivals have been happening all over Europe and Canada. There was it was called Moving Pictures Festival in Toronto for many years, for 14 years.
Wow.
But dance media was being screened everywhere, but not in L.A., it was brand new. People didn't know of it, which is ridiculous because this was the birthplace of the Hollywood musical
in the
30s, where, you know, it was born here, and it influenced so many people all over the world, the Hollywood musical. And, so it was ironic that it didn't have a strong contingent already.
Right. It was just waiting to happen.
I just happened to be the one to turn on the light.
Yeah. And I was looking at your website, which I should really say to all of our listeners is quite stunning. I mean, while there are some clips, I think you have an introduction video on your homepage that kind of gives viewers a bit of an introduction to type of films that are going to be screened and have been screened at Dance Camera West, but also your website is just full of these absolutely stunning film stills from films that you've shown over the years, I gather, and from films that are about to be shown. And I noticed as I was going through the schedule for this year's festival, which, as I mentioned before, is happening in just 4 days. You must be incredibly busy. when I was looking at the films that are going to be shown, I noticed something like 11, I could be wrong with the exact number, but 11 Canadian selections.
Really?
Yeah, and I thought that was really exciting. I mean, as well as a bunch, of course, from the U.S. and the U.K. and the Netherlands and Spain, et cetera, et cetera. But I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about how you've seen kind of the Canadian presence in dance film evolve over the 10 years of the festival.
First of all, the website, we just uploaded our new 2-minute trailer,
trailer
on the homepage.
It's my favorite trailer.
And then in our media section, there's a lot of other video there as well. But, you know, Canada has this incredible thing called BravoFact that's been around, you know, producing, commissioning work, you're putting together directors, filmmakers, and choreographers for... I think it's 15, 17 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, again, it's like, you know, everyday business in Canada to see dance media
right.
and on TV. And I know it's been a huge success in throughout Canada, bringing more people to concert dance even.
Mm-hmm.
And every year we have a strong, you know, new crop of dance films from Canada. I mean, they're strong, they're, you know, beautiful, they're poignant, they're important. I mean, the subject matter varies from, you know, everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's always Canadians at our dance festival.
That's wonderful.
Dance film festival.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. And now to this year's festival, which is, as I mentioned, is the 10th anniversary. Tell us a little bit about what's going to be happening this year.
Well, we open Thursday night up at the Getty Center. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, we go back to the beautiful, amazing Getty Center, and we have a program of international short films this year. We're calling it Global Screen Dance because, mm-hmm. you know, this work. We've got work, we've had work from, what is it, like 57 different countries over the last 10 years. We're talking Estonia,
wow.
Zimbabwe, and the social political content of, you know, what shapes the artist, you know, what's their environment, you know, what are they thinking, what are they talking about, and it's interesting, the similarities, and it's really fascinating, the differences of what, you know, this global palette, you know, does. And so we open with this global screen dance, and then on Friday we're at UCLA with a conference bringing in people from, I have 25 different presenters, artists coming in from all over the world, and all of our programs this year are free to the public.
Oh, wow.
And so we have a day-long conference, which is completely open to the public. All the information and all the different presenters are on the website, dancecamerawest.org.
Mm-hmm.
Friday evening, then, we have another Global Screen Dance 2, our second collection of international short dance films called Screen Dance.
Mm-hmm.
That will be in the amphitheater at UCLA Fowler Museum. And then Saturday and Sunday, we're at the Hammer Museum. And with our third collection of Global Screen Dance, a documentary series, and we have Mike Figgis coming from the UK, director, filmmaker, composer, photographer, multifaceted artist. Mike Figgis coming with his new dance film. It's an hour-long dance film that he collaborated with Anne van den Broek, a Dutch choreographer. It's fantastic, absolutely amazing. There is a trailer on our website, on our online media kit, for this film called The Codelette Film. It's from the Codelette stage performance that Anne van den Broek did in 2007, and won her choreography for the stage work, won quite a few choreography awards.
That's wonderful. That's very exciting. Do you have anything in particular that you're looking forward to, that you're just dying to see? Or all of it?
Actually, what I'm... first of all, you have to understand, at this point, I've seen all the films 12 times.
Right.
You know?
right. Number,
I don't know,
round
I'm
number 13.
what I'm looking forward to are the artists coming in from all over the world, the presenters, they're amazing presenters at the conference, and they're all my friends.
Oh, that's great.
That's great. I'm really looking forward to seeing everyone. It's really... going to be quite the gathering of people, and also the conference the festival attendees are coming from all over the world as well, with someone flying in from South Korea, you know, throughout Europe, just coming to attend the festival.
Oh, wow.
So that's, and Canada, of course. I'm just looking forward to it because it's just a lot of fun.
Right.
So let me ask you something. Now that you are so involved in dance films, how do you feel when you see a normal dance performance, or do you still attend a normal dance performance?
Well,
live performance.
You ask that. I do go see dance. There's a lot of dance that comes through Los Angeles, of course, being a huge city. I can get bored. You know, I'm used to being close up personal, very visceral, impactful experience. And mm-hmm. if it's not happening in a big way on stage, mm-hmm. It's pretty flat for me. Mm-hmm. I've been looking, at dance on screen for, 20 years now. Mm-hmm. And it's incredibly exciting. What's really fascinating for a new audience, we have turned so many people on to dance. And just again,
oh, really?
The statistics from Bravo Fact right there in Canada, the first few years, what they realized was that more people, when they started broadcasting Bravo Fact right away, mm-hmm. throughout all of Canada, we're talking about Saskatchewan, we're talking about, mm-hmm. all over, and they found that the audience for concert dance grew mm-hmm. after seeing it on TV. So it really does excite people. They say, oh, and what we've done with Dance Camera West is there's so many wonderful spaces. I talked about, these world-class, beautiful museums that we're at, the Hammer Museum, the Getty Center, et cetera. We're at all the big museums, but we've also taken the work outdoors to parks. We went up to Tree People, a nonprofit organization their main objective is to teach people the importance of having trees, which is laughable up in Canada because you have trees. I grew up in Michigan. I know this. But in, L.A. is a desert. It's a desert climate. And so they've greened L.A., for the last 20 years and worked with kids. Anyways, it's a beautiful space that they're in, an outdoor space, and we draped fabric and trees and stretched lycra between trees and projected things. And we didn't know this at the time, but what happened when you take lycra and you stretch it really tight between two trees, the lycra disappears, and it's almost holographic, the image. Yeah, it was like, oh, my God, we never thought that. We didn't realize that. So anyways, we do a lot of alternative screening and using alternative formats and ways of presenting the work, which has really brought in a whole new audience. And again, not only to dance media, because it totally flips them out. Like, what? What is this? And then, of course, you give a choreographer a camera, and they immediately leave the studio. They immediately leave the stage. Mm. So seldom do we even show anything that has a flat floor. There's been... and every year there's a different theme, a global theme, a collective unconscious in a sense, where, we'll have 5 films made in a bathroom that year. Mm. It's like, what? What for that? or in a railroad car, we don't even know that there's still railroad cars around. subway stations, that there'll be a big rash of subway stations one year. Mm. Death was a really interesting subject about 3 years ago. And I think that was due to 9/11. If you think about it, by the time you get funding and you start doing something, you do pre-production, and everything takes a little longer, in the arts because of the funding issue. And then you finally do the production, and then you finally do post-production. By that time, it was like 3 years ago. And I went, wow, that was a reaction.
The wave.
What we had 3 years ago, what was the reaction from 2001?
Yeah.
So,
wow.
I'm sorry, I went off on a tangent.
No. That's very interesting.
Very interesting. Great.
Wow. Well, Lynette, in order for all of our listeners to know more about the festival and to, potentially buy a one-way ticket on Wednesday to come down and see it, where can people go to find out about tickets, about the schedule?
DanceCamWest.org.
Excellent. Excellent.
And all of our events, I have to say, the Getty Center is sold out on Thursday evening. But the other event is first come, first serve. You don't reserve tickets, but you can get information. You can buy a pass, festival pass, of course. And all that information is right on our website, dancetimewest.org.
Excellent. Well, Lynette, I want to thank you so much for being with us so early on the West Coast. I really appreciate it. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. thank you very much.
And all the best for a wonderful 10th anniversary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing.
It's exciting.
I wish I could be there.
I know.
It would be wonderful.
Thank you so much.
All right.
We've been speaking with Lynette Kessler, who's the founder and executive artistic director of Dance Camera West, a dance media film festival that's going to be happening in Los Angeles starting this Thursday, June 16th, going till June 19th. And before Lynette, we were speaking with Mary Jo Mullins, who's the co-artistic director of with Kathleen Hughes of the Niagara Dance Company. She was speaking with Roshanik. And I also would like to thank the amazing all-show co-host, Angela Bloomberg, an alum of the Evie Dance program, who has joined us today and been so incredibly gracious with her time and energy.
You're very welcome.
And Angela does have a little bit more information to share with the listeners about the Rivoli project. So, Angela.
Yeah, it was just Rivoli Dances Back to the Basics, which takes place this Tuesday, June 14th, also features work of Kira Jean Green in collaboration with Jasmine Pfiff. And Kira Jean Green is a member of Cadence Dance, who just have a fabulous production. So don't miss her work. She's also part of Back to the Basics this Tuesday, June 14th at 8 p.m.
So once again, I'd like to thank Roshanik and Angela. I'm Sky Fairchild-Waller, and you've been listening to Evie Dance on CIUT 89.5 FM.